recording here. I really wanted to talk today as an introduction to the halachos, or not the halachos, really just the psukim that go through rebuke. And when I say psukim, I really mean phrase with the surrounding psukim. And I talked to a couple of you in terms of how we want to structure this, and obviously with Zoom, it's a little difficult. But we're going to try as best as we can to make it more interactive. Now, how are we going to do that? Hopefully, at least those who are on Zoom, and it seems like most of you have been here before, if not all of you. But hopefully, you'll know how to mute and unmute yourself. So right now, I'm actually hearing some background noise, so I'm going to mute everyone. We're going to try to test this. I was talking to somebody else who runs a Jewish organization yesterday, and some of our conversation revolved around the utility or lack thereof of using Zoom for classes. And they were bemoaning to me the fact that the people that are in their classes clearly aren't paying attention. They're clearly not involved. They're clearly not engaged. And it's very hard to get them engaged because it's Zoom and you have to, you know, the mute and the unmute, and people don't know how to work the technology, etc. So I'm going to try to, you know, run an experiment to see if that's true. So Baruch Hashem, we have a lot of people here that I think have a lot to say, and it would be a shame for me to, as we did with Sfiras HaOmer, sort of just present things. And, you know, people did, you know, jump in and out when they wanted to say something, but we're going to make more of a concerted effort to try to create conversation. And specifically now, because Sfiras HaOmer, we already sort of, you know, we had to finish it before we started Sphere in order to make it more impactful. So we had this sort of a deadline to get to, but now we have all the time in the world. Mirtz Hashem, B'lian Hara, we'll have the time in the world together in the physical world, you know, in person. But we can take our time and really try to understand some things. And so, as opposed to before where I shied away from asking questions and opening the floor up, we're going to try to do that. We'll see how it goes. It might be that we have to revert back. But just a word of, public service, you know, a technicality point. If you don't know how to unmute yourself, so figure it out now. If you need help, I can help you. But once you unmute yourself, make sure to re-mute yourself, right? To make sure to do it again, because the background noise, even if you don't think it's there, oftentimes is. And even if you know it's not there, you know, who knows what can happen in the next 5 seconds. So let's just try to keep the mute function on until you want to talk. So it'll be a bit of an experiment. So the truth is that I wanted to focus on something which, as an introduction to the introduction, something which I alluded to yesterday in the Women's Parsha Shir, and that is the concept of the Metzorah. And the Metzorah, as we know, either whether you were at yesterday's Shir or not, can only be declared a Metzorah by the dint of the Kohen Gadol statement, right? He can't look at himself and say, I'm a Metzorah. He needs the Kohen Gadol to come tell him. And I wanted to ask, and this will be our trial run to figure out how this works. Does anyone know? This is sort of a trick question, and I'm sure there are a couple of you that are going to figure out why it's a trick question. But does anyone know who is the only person in the Torah that gets tzaras? Who is the only person in the Torah that gets tzaras?
Miriam.
The obvious thing would be Miriam, yeah.
Yes, who said that? I saw Adina said it. Was that Mincy that also said it? Shoshana, okay.
Yeah. Sarita said it.
Sarita said it? Oh, I don't even see Sarita. Oh, she's on the second page. Baruch Hashem, we have so many people here. So Miriam's the obvious answer at the end of Ha'aloscha. Right towards the end of the Parsha, she talks presumably about Moshe and Tzipora's relationship. Fascinating psychological approach that maybe if we're back in Shul Baal Oscha, I can talk about what's really going on in the back of Miriam's mind, which I think is really a fascinating discussion.
Moshe gets it all.
Good. So Moshe got Tsaras. That's a good way to put it. He got it. But he didn't contract Tsaras, right? Hashem gave him Tsaras in order to show him the signs when he puts his hand in the coat, etc., that his v'hine yadom mitzoras kasheleg, that his hand was stricken with Tsaras, but it wasn't that he, you know, chas v'shalom did something, although there are allusions to the fact that maybe he criticized the Jewish people, that they wouldn't believe him, etc., and that's why he got Tsaras. Some people, some Mepharshim explain that way, but the main person in Torah, there are other people in Tanakh that get it. The main person in Torah is Miriam. And what's interesting about this pasuk, I don't know if anyone's ever looked at it, if you have a Chamisha Chumshei Torah in front of you, so at the end of Parshas Baaloscha, so in these pasukim, there's something very interesting that you see about this scene. So you have the whole situation where Moshe and Aaron and Miriam are talking about their brother Moshe, and then Hashem steps in, right? Hashem steps in to really, to basically, you know, defend Moshe Rabbeinu's honor. He says, for everybody, including Aaron and Miriam, by the way, for everyone else, B'mara Eilav Esfada, I showed them myself, I showed them the visions in some kind of dream. I haven't said it yet. But we're in Parak Yud Beis 12. Right now I'm at Pasuk Ches, but I'm going to be going to Pasuk Yud in a second. Right, but Hashem says, Pel, Daber Bo, I speak to Moshe, mouth to mouth, right? We're speaking right to him. Mara Velo B'chidos, it's clear, and it's not in any kind of secrecy. Usmunas Hashem Yabit, and a, whatever this means, a picture of God he sees. We know that he didn't see, based on the conversation that we see from before in Kisisa. Umadua Lo Yereisem L'daber B'avdi Moshe, and why have you not been afraid, or hesitant is probably a better word here. Why haven't you been hesitant to speak this way about Moshe? Don't you know how great Moshe is? And Hashem says, Vayichar af Hashem bam vayilach. Hashem was angry with them, and he walked away. Okay, and then what happens? Ve'anan sar me'al ha'olel. This is in Pasuk Yud 12:10 in Bamidbar, the Parshas Baaloscha at the end. And the cloud, which was the way that he spoke to Aaron and Miriam, which was above the Mishkan, sar me'al ha'ohel, it removed itself away from the tent, v'hine Miriam mitzoras kashalik. Same exact phrase, by the way, that's used by Moshe Rabbeinu. She has tsaras like snow. V'yifen Aaron el Miriam, Aaron turns to Miriam, v'hine mitzoras, and behold, she was a mitzoras. She had Tsaras. So it's very interesting, this phrasing from the pasuk. First of all, it tells us the narrator of the Torah, right? Hashem tells us, number one, by the way, Miriam has Tsaras. Number two, Aaron turned to Miriam. And number three, she has Tsaras. Right? So it's very interesting. What exactly is going on? It would seem to be, one could make the drush, although it doesn't seem like there's a lot of discussion. Actually, the Orach Chaim says, let's see what the Orach Chaim says. V'neimit Tsaras lo hayat tsarach lomar hadavar. She didn't have to say that. Achshe kfar amar v'neimit Miriam Tsaras. It already said that Miriam had Tsaras. Rather, what does it mean? Shamar shegam Aaron Tsarah. Interesting. It sounds from this, that from the Orach Chaim, quoting from the Sifri, that Aaron also had Tsaras. I guess that's another answer to my question. Yirtze lomar hine hi adayim mit Tsaras v'lo paracham imen k'aron. Oh, Aaron had it and lost it. Okay, I don't exactly know what it's talking about. Wow, interesting. That it's specifically when Aaron turned to look at Miriam that she got Tsaras. Interesting, that actually helps me a little bit in what I was going to say. But it would seem to be that there is an extra quality about Tsaras, which is not just that a person physically has something on their body, but part and parcel of the character of someone who is a mitzora, or someone who is a mitzora, someone who has tsaras, is that they're looked upon, that they are, I would guess, for lack of a better term, they're judged. And as we said yesterday in the class, tsaras is brought about, most people often are inclined to say, because of Moti Shemra, because of Lashon Hara, speaking poorly about somebody else. The remedy, part of the remedy, of someone who speaks poorly about somebody else is that other people get to judge them. Right? They think that they can judge everybody else, speak poorly about everybody else. The Kohen is the only person that can make them into a Metzorah because they need to be judged. They need to know how it feels when somebody else looks at them critically. And that's part of the lesson. I think, however, it goes a step further than that. Because it's not only the case that a person needs to feel bad, but it also is the case that a person needs to know what it means to not have other people. As we know, the halacha is that they're sent out into a separate camp, outside of the camp, a separate city, where all the Mitzorahs get together. Now, they don't really get together, but they have to go to social isolation. What's the purpose of that social isolation? There's another person that gets socially isolated. Who's that in halacha? Who's another person in halacha that gets socially isolated? Even people that are tamei don't have to be socially isolated. They have to someone not touch.
In an ir miklat, someone in the ir miklat.
Good, in ir nidachas, a safe haven city, where someone who accidentally murdered has to run away to that city. Now, the halachos of a mitzorah and a person who has to go because of their rotsayach b'shkaga are very different. The person who's an accidental murderer and presumably is not as at fault as a real murderer gets the privilege of having, if he's a Rebbe, he gets his entire yeshiva with him. If he's a student, he gets his Rebbe with him. And even in the Rambam has very flowery reasons for why a person needs his own Rebbe. He can't just get a Levi to come around and be his Rebbe. He gets his own Rebbe, the one he's so used to, gets to go to the Ir Miklat with him. I said Ir Nidach, so I don't know why I said that. But Ir Miklat, he gets to go to that safe haven with him. That person gets those luxuries. A Mitzorah does not get those luxuries. He's got to be by himself. Badad Yeshev Michutz HaMachne, he sits by himself. That's not only to say he doesn't know how to get along with people, but it's also to teach him what it means to not have other people that can show him the way of life. And as we know, the Mishnah tells us, Ezu Chacham Halomin B'kol Adam.
But the Mitzorah has other Mitzorah with him. I mean, the Haftorah, they were those three guys
who
camp, and they were the ones who reported that they have to go back in.
Right. This is an interesting Haftorah, but the I think there's a machlokas poskim whether or not they're allowed to be with each other. I'm not 100% sure. I think it's machlokas. But either way, the point is they don't have their normal, they don't get their Rebbe, and they don't get their teachers. They don't get the other people that they could learn from, as opposed to the Rotsiach B'Shkaga. So what's interesting is that part of the lesson we're trying to teach the Mitzorah is that they have to be able to accept criticism. They have to be able to accept other people teaching them things that maybe they don't know as much as they think. And we said yesterday from the Gemara in Erechin again, which by the way is the same daf that we're going to be focusing on in the coming weeks, same general dapim of Erechin. And that Gemara had said, if you remember, that one of the other reasons for Tzaras is Gasus Haruach, someone who's very haughty, right? Someone who doesn't feel like they need anybody else, that everybody else is below them. So in the same way, we can understand that the Mitzorah is a person that maybe doesn't take Tochacha very well. And part of the process of teaching them is teaching them how to be taught. Teaching them that they do have what to learn from other people, that Ezu Chacham Halomin B'Kol Adam, that every person can learn from anyone else. And just because you think you're one way, even no matter what your position is, you can always be taught more. And there's a certain humility that's being instilled within the Mitzorah that I think is part and parcel of the halachas of Hocheach Tochiach, of the halacha of rebuke. But in order to really understand if that's true, we have to go through the pesukim themselves. And the truth is that the pesukim, the pasuk of Hocheach Tochiach, is not only connected to this week's Parshios, but it's obviously connected to next week's Parshios because it's in next week's Parshios. If you look at the halach, if you look at Vayikra Yud Tes, I don't know if anyone has a chumash with them. Would people want me to put it onto the screen? Because then I can't really see anyone, or I can see only a few people. But I can put the actual text on the screen for people that want to see it. Mm-hmm. I think I have it here. Let's see. Let's see if this works. if anyone's on the screen, they can see it, but if you're on the phone, you can't see it. Waiting for it to load. I don't know if anyone else has it. Does anyone else have it? Oh, there it is. Okay. So this is the Pasuk of Hochiach Tochiach. And people, I think, can see when I'm scrolling up and down also, right? Yeah, okay, good. Right now, a head nod suffices. So if you see the beginning, this is Parshas Kedoshim. And as we know, the Parsha of Kedoshim talks about a lot of things, obviously. But a lot of the Parsha actually talks about interpersonal relationships. And it's kind of interesting, the whole topic of what does Kedusha mean, what is holiness. We can talk about it next week. But what you see already here, from the 19th chapter, for those who have their own Chumashim, the 19th chapter of Vayikra Yud Tes, so it transitions from speaking about your fields and how you should give over some of your produce to the poor person or the convert or the foreigner in your midst, and then through there it transitions into talking about how to treat other people. So you see here, lo tignovu. Many people think that the halacha of not stealing is in the Ten Commandments. It's not true. The halacha of the Aseres Hadibros is not to kidnap, right? Lo tignov is in the Ten Commandments, but it doesn't mean not to steal. Here it means, lo tignovu means to actually not steal monetarily. So that's what you have here in Pasuk Yud Aleph. But if you keep looking, so you shall not steal, you shall not deal deceitfully or falsely with one another. Okay, you should be honest. You shouldn't swear falsely. This is presumably in terms of testimony. Similar also to the Aseres Hadibros. You will be profaning the name of Hashem if you do so. Then it keeps going. You shall not defraud your fellow man, and you shouldn't steal. What's the difference between gazela and geneva? Geneva is behind a person's back. Gazela is right in front of them, or out in the open at least. We've seen this halacha in a few places. You shouldn't leave over the wages of a laborer with you until the morning. You have to pay him on time. And this is a very interesting pasuk, which very difficult to understand exactly what it means, at least, that you shouldn't insult a deaf person in front of a blind person. You shouldn't put a stumbling block, which we interpret to mean not only a literal blind person, but anyone who's blind in any matter. You can't give bad advice to that person if you know that they don't have the wherewithal to properly filter out your advice. And you shall fear God because I am Hashem. What exactly that means, presumably what it means is a lot of these things can be done very deceitfully, and you wouldn't necessarily recognize when a person does them to you. So Hashem says, even if nobody else knows, I know. So you have to be careful. Then the Pasuk in Tesvav says in 15, Lo sasu ava b'mishpat, you shouldn't render an unfair decision. Lo sisa p'nei dal, you shouldn't favor the poor. Lo sedar p'nei gadol, and you shouldn't favor the I guess, big person, great person. You should deal with justice. We talked about this a little bit yesterday. You shouldn't be a rachil. What's a rachil? A peddler. But it's not the kind of peddler we talked about yesterday. It's a peddler of bad news, of saying bad things. Lashon hara. And then, you also shouldn't stand idly by. This is a very interesting juxtaposition, not something that we're going to talk about now. Maybe we'll talk about it a different time. That there is a juxtaposition between Lashon Hara and protecting other people. Presumably what that means is that on the one hand, you can't speak poorly about people. But if there's something that's going to protect them, you have to say it. It's very interesting how the Pasuk defined or juxtaposed those two ideas. People talk about this in regards to shidduchim and other things. Like on the one hand, you want to you don't want to spread rumors, but on the other hand, you also have to protect people. You have to know what's a relevant thing to say, what's a non-relevant thing to say. Ani Hashem, again, those things are inside of a person, and it's in this context, in this litany of random halachos between people, obviously not random, but what seems to be sort of a smorgasbord of different interpersonal relationship halachos, we have Pasuk Yud Zayin. And Pasuk Yud Zayin, as you'll notice, has three phrases in it. We're going to try to focus on each one of them tonight to try to understand why they are in the order that they are and why the Torah uses the words that it uses. Phrase number one, Lo sisna es achicha bilvavecha. You shall not hate your kinsfolk in your heart. This is how Sefaria translates it. Let's get some interaction here. Who wants to tell us what do they think is stands out to them about this phrase? Bachi, you want to tell us what you think about this phrase? You got to unmute. She's working on it. She's going to get it. She's pushing it. If you have a red microphone, just press the...
Scared.
There you go.
I unmuted. Okay, I had to even get back to where I could see people instead of text.
Oh.
So, you shouldn't hate your fellow person in your heart. Maybe, like, you pretend to be their friend and actually, like, you maybe you're being two-faced about it, so it's more inward, but you're harboring some kind of grudge.
Right. So it's very interesting. Bacha is picking up on, but not explicit. She's sort of speaking at the second level already. But the nuance that Bacha is picking up on is, what is the word bilvavecha doing there? Why do we need the... If the Torah were to say, lo tisnat achicha, don't hate your brother. So what would we have thought? It means don't hate. What does the word bilvavecha mean? How else are you supposed to hate your friend? So Bacha very astutely points out that it's saying this hatred is only problematic, and this is actually how some paskin, it's only problematic when it's exclusively in your heart. If, however, it's not exclusively in your heart, but rather also outwardly, so then it's not a problem. It's actually mutter, at least midaraisa. So to the extent that I think the Rambam even says explicitly, if you hate your friend and you punch him in the face, you have not violated this pasuk. Because you have outwardly hated your friend, not simply inwardly. So that's the first phrase of the pasuk. And it's with this backdrop of not hating your brother in your heart that it says the words that we're going to be focusing on for the next while, Hocheach tochiach es amitecha, that you shall reprove, you shall rebuke your amitecha. It's very interesting here. They almost translate amitecha the same way as achicha. One of the things that we'll have to decide is what is the difference between achicha and amitecha. Not going to be easy to figure that one out. But that's what we're going to be trying to figure out in a second. But let's focus on the last phrase also before we do that. V'lo tisa alav chet. This is presumably the most ambiguous part of the pasuk. Who wants to tell us what does that mean? What do they think that means? If anyone wants, they can just unmute if you have something to say.
I would say don't bring somebody to sin.
Okay.
Don't lead somebody to sin.
Or you maybe don't lead them to sin. Okay.
And don't stop it. Then the sin becomes yours in a way.
Okay, good. So what's interesting about the way that Mincy is saying it is, it's not that you've caused them to sin, but you're responsible for their sin, right? Adina was saying it almost as if you've sort of developed or cultivated the sin within them, which is possible depending on the situation. But if you look very closely at the words, what does velo tisa mean? You shall not carry. You shall not carry a love upon him a sin. It could be, yeah.
Wouldn't this have great ramifications with children who are just coming to bar mitzvah or just past bar mitzvah?
That is a very important point. And I have a sefer here. I think I got this when I got married. It's all about Ben Adam LaChaver, how to treat other people. And they split up
Your wife.
What?
Including your wife.
Yes. That's why they gave it to me, presumably.
Yes.
Yeah, from my shul. But it says here, this is how they phrase the topic of the Sefer. I don't know if anyone can see it here. It says...
See it, not it.
It says here, Hocheach Tochiach, and in parentheses it says, Chinuch Ketanim. How to rebuke people, and also how to teach your kids. So those two things are really one and the same idea. We oftentimes think of criticizing others or to teach others, rebuking others as other people. But the truth is, it applies to our children too. That anyone that we have a responsibility towards, which may or may not be only to our children, it could also be like Hashavas Aveda, it could be relevant to the people that we see doing something wrong. When we see them doing something wrong, that becomes our responsibility. Much like when we see a lost item that we talked about before, the whole Machlokas Rashi and the Rambam about when it starts, many of the Rishonim explain, it starts the moment you see it. Your obligation to bring back the item starts the moment you see it. So presumably one could say that just like Hashavas Aveda, the obligation to rebuke somebody starts the moment you see them doing something wrong. It could be that's the case too. So this is one of the things we're going to have to talk about, but it all comes from these phrases. Now, how do we understand these three phrases? Specifically, how do we understand the first phrase and the last phrase within the dynamic of the mitzvah of rebuke? Said another way, do one or both of these phrases on the side help us define the mitzvah of rebuke at all? And this is sort of an open-ended question if someone wants to chime in. The mitzvah of rebuke is specifically sandwiched within these two phrases. One could presumably claim that these two phrases, at the beginning and the end, are trying to contextualize, almost literally, they're put within the sandwich of these two halachas. On the one hand, it's the sandwich of not hating your friends. And on the other hand is the other side of the sandwich of not carrying their guilt or carrying their sin. We have to understand if that's a literal phrase or not.
You can't give rebuke out of hate.
Okay, that's interesting. One is I've thought about that, at least in my memory, I don't think I've thought about that. One could, and this is sort of a Hasidish read of the Pasuk based on what Reina is saying. I know she comes from the Rambam, so probably not the Hasidish type. But one could say that the second phrase of Hocheach Tochiach, which we're focusing on, is coming on the heels of Lo Sisna Sechicha B'Levavecha, because what it means is, before you rebuke somebody, make sure you don't hate them. That's very interesting. What would be the radical conclusion of that in a halachic way? That if somebody rebukes a person while they hate them, so the question becomes, have they actually fulfilled the mitzvah? Do you get the mitzvah of rebuke if you did it out of hatred?
Or you can say that you rebuke them so you don't feel hatred, like you get it out.
Oh, interesting. And I think this is how maybe Bacha was alluding to before, that part of the mitzvah of, or a part of the prohibition of hatred is that you can't keep it in. Right? So how is it that lo sisna sechicha b'levavecha? How do you actually fulfill that mitzvah of not hating your friend in your heart? Meaning, as opposed to Reina, who was trying to say that Hocheach Tochiach is predicated on Lo Sisna Sechicha B'Levavecha, Adina and maybe Batya are now saying Hocheach Tochiach is the remedy of Lo Sisna Sechicha B'Levavecha. It's very interesting. And this is how you have to juxtapose these phrases to try to figure out how we can understand the mitzvah of rebuke. Anyone else have something to say in terms of these two phrases? I see Mincy's off. Yeah.
Yeah. leaping at the thing, right? Part of what's going on in these phrases in this pasuk is that some kind of active engagement with another person. Hashem is not saying to us, therefore walk away from it or ignore him.
Okay.
In other words, you can't ignore it. You need to address your feelings where they are. You can't morally distance yourself from another person.
Right. You can't escape your obligation.
Right.
Or you can't escape your emotions, probably a better way to say it, the way you're telling me. Right?
And then you should acknowledge that that's what ties you to other people. And that you should be tied to other people.
Okay, it's a good drasha. I like it.
some people may
sounds like Aviva. Yes.
Some people may see someone doing something that needs correcting, but instead of doing that, they just look down on them or mock them and ignore the behavior. Just use it as an occasion for lashon hara, maybe for just spreading revulsion of that person.
Interesting. So I think I don't know if this is exactly what Aviva is saying, but if I can run with what Aviva is saying for a moment, one could understand the pasuk as Aviva is saying as two options of the same situation. And this is in some ways what Adina and Batya, what I explained Adina and Batya as. But you could say you see somebody doing something wrong. So now you have two options. You have one, the option of tisna sechicha b'levavecha. You can make that into a situation where you hate your friends, where you look down on your friends. Or you can make that a learning moment, or as they say, a teaching moment. Instead of making it into hatred, make sure you tell them what's wrong and you get it out into the open. And I think it's a little bit different from Batya and Adin, because what it's saying is basically when you come to this situation. Batya and Adin are basically, you know, their suggestion of how to understand the pasuk is if you have this hatred in front of in internally for your friends, go over to them and start to try to help them become better. That's not necessarily in response to anything specific. It's just how your relationship is. You know, that instead you should speak it over. And what's very interesting to me, it's probably the wrong crowd for this mashal, but I was watching a documentary about a basketball team. That sometimes in these basketball teams, there's a lot of subtle hostility between players. You don't pass me the ball enough. You shoot too much. And what I always find fascinating is they're not very deep people. Oftentimes, they're not the controversies that the media sort of, you know, stirs oftentimes are much simpler than these long, you know, thesis, you know, promotion, you know, the whole thesis process about, oh, they don't like Kim because of this and because of that, because of whatever. It's usually much simpler. And specifically on one team, I'm thinking about the Golden State Warriors. If anyone remembers, it's going to be completely over everyone's head. But they had probably one of the best players in the league on their team. And something happened one day that a person said one phrase, and it just made him hate the rest of the year. He was like, you know, mean to the rest of the team, and ultimately he left the team after the season. And what's interesting about it, it's so clear to me that part of the reason is because he didn't talk to anybody. The second it happened, and they have the whole thing on video because of, you know, how much these people are scrutinized. You can see the interaction where one person says something to the other person and the other person just walks away. And then for the rest of the year, they never talk to each other. And it reminded me a lot of what Aviva just said, reminded me of this. Lahavdil, you know, they don't have mitzvos and maybe they should, whatever. But what stirs the pot is not always the fact that you confront what a person does wrong, but it's the fact that you don't confront it. You don't mention, hey, that really hurt me. Hey, that really bothered me. And the more you avoid it and let it fester, the harder it's ever going to be to overcome it. Because those feelings will just continue to snowball. Sorry, we're having a guest in here today. Come on. This is the boy that never goes to sleep. That's what we call him. And it's another one of those nights. Right?
Hi, Asha.
Say hi. Want to wave? You know, I think he was at one of the other classes. Maybe Monday night he came. And I kept saying, you should wave, you should say hi. And he never did it. The second I turned it off, he's saying, bye-bye, bye-bye, bye-bye. So, like, while he's on, he's not going to talk to anybody. But the second you guys go off, he'll talk. You want to say hi? Mm-hmm.
Rabbi Katz, when I first read the sentence of thing, I was thinking of it from the point of view of the person, not who's being reproached, but that you shall not hate your kinsfolk in your heart, because it's harder on you. If you bear a grudge, that does you damage for a long time. I mean, people who bear grudges and even if they reproach someone and they get it off their chest, they can still hold something against them. So they're saying you shouldn't incur no guilt. I think it's on you to say, that you shouldn't be feeling bad, even though you've tried to do something to rectify it.
Right. And so Sarita is,
told the person what needs to be done.
So Sarita is transitioning us into the second half of the pasuk, or the last third of the pasuk, which is we've now discovered different ways to unlock the juxtaposition between phrase number one and hocheach tochiach. That lo sisna sechicha bilvavecha has different ways of informing the mitzvah of rebuke. We saw from, we heard from Reina that maybe it's defining the, or giving a condition to the rebuke. That you have to not hate somebody before you rebuke them. We saw from Adina and Batya earlier, we heard that maybe the first phrase is teaching us that it's a way to remedy the hatred, that it's the way to get rid of that feeling. And then we just heard from Aviva that maybe it's talking about two possible approaches to the same situation. You can either harbor hatred based on what you see, or you can tell them how it is based on what you see. So those are three approaches that we came up with ourselves in terms of how to understand how the first phrase informs the mitzvah of Hocheach Tochiach. Now Sarita is introducing to us what the last phrase could be saying. That's the juxtaposition from the first phrase. But how could the last phrase be, giving us an interpretation of Hocheach Tochiach? And Sarita was just saying that maybe what it means is not referring to the guilt of the other person when they're doing something wrong and you don't rebuke them, which is one approach to understanding it. But rather what it means is, lo tisa alav, you shouldn't hold that burden on account of them. That your chait of holding it in, of holding that grudge, is the result of not doing the rebuke, right? So, is that Sarita again?
No, it's Aviva.
Aviva, yeah.
Yeah. So, is that why? Who was it, Chafetz Chaim, or others say that nowadays we don't even know properly how to rebuke?
Yeah. So the Chafetz Chaim might have said that, but he might be echoing a Gemara from 2,000 years before him. So we'll get to that. We'll get to that. But yeah, no, it's definitely part of that. How exactly we do it and when are the times that it applies, we'll get into all the specifics. But that's definitely one of the Gemaras that we'll hopefully have to look at in terms of understanding how do we actually practically do this mitzvah nowadays. And some of it might come down to understanding the dynamics of this pasuk. So one approach to understanding the last third of the pasuk, lo tisa alav chet, in its basic understanding means, if you don't tell them what they're doing wrong, so then you're going to hold that burden, meaning it's partially your responsibility, as Minty was telling us earlier. But now we have from Sarita told us that maybe it's not talking about that, maybe it's talking about the fact that you yourself are going to be holding that in. And that itself is a chait. To hold it in is a chait. And you have to get it out.
Could it also be that do it improperly and in a way that doesn't... that he doesn't receive properly, however, that instead of doing something right, you are bringing a chait to yourself.
That's an interesting point. I think I've seen that before. Where have I seen that? Yes, the Gemara talks about it that way also. That's the second Gemara Aviva has already looked into her crystal ball to figure out. Yeah, Rashi quotes it from the Gemara. We'll look at the Rishonim in a second, but that's definitely one of them. That the last phrase is a clarification on the medium of rebuke, meaning but make sure lo tisalav chet while you do it, right? You should rebuke your friend, but make sure you don't sin in the process while you do it. Right. This is sort of almost. This is almost like the Mishnah we started off with for Hashavas Aveda. If you remember, the way back when the Gemara in Baba Metzia Daf Lamed, maybe it was, that said that. Ow. you're silly. That the mitzvah of Hashavas Aveda is not only an opportunity, but it's a responsibility. Right, you remember the Mishnah that talks about you got a book from your friend. You have to make sure that you go through it once in a while, otherwise it's going to get old and it's going to get dusty and it's going to get ruined, and that's going to be on you. That's your responsibility to make sure that it stays in good shape. So here too, you have the opportunity of rebuke, but you also have to make sure that you don't really ruin that opportunity and bring upon yourself the responsibility or the consequence of not doing it properly. So that's another way to understand it. Any other interpretations of how this last part of the pasuk of you should not incur upon yourself the guilt, how does that inform or define the hochiach tochiach? What's that juxtaposition for? Yeah, Dina.
I would say, you know, you're rebuking your friend, and he chooses to not listen to you, and maybe you were trying to tell him, don't do this because it's not proper, and he does it anyway. Then you feel vindicated because you tried, and it's not your fault he didn't listen.
So this is again. This is one of those dangling modifiers. What is the word lo going on? Is it lo chet or is it lo tisa alav chet? Meaning that. If you rebuke them, so then you're not going to have that sin upon you on his account. Or is it saying you shouldn't have a sin when you do that? But here Adina is telling us that maybe what it means is, as long as you do hochiach tochiach, lo tisa alav chet. It's not a prescription, but a description. As long as you do your job, it's not going to be your problem. As long as you tell your piece that you have to tell them, you know, you're not supposed to do that, so then that's not your responsibility anymore. Very similar to a Gemara that we know, a Gemara that's, I think, also around Bava Metzia where we were learning for Hashavas Aveda, that the ki yipol hanofel mimenu. The pasuk says by a maka, by a fence on your roof. The pasuk says, the one who will fall, will fall. So the Gemara says, what do you mean, the one who will fall? He's already going to fall. Yipol hanofel. The one who falls is going to fall. So if he's going to fall anyway, so why do we need to make a mitzvah? So the Gemara says, I think we just did in Daf Yomi, that's why I'm thinking of it, that he's going to fall regardless. The question is just whether or not it's going to be your fault. Right? So this person, he might be sinning regardless. The question is just, is it going to be your fault? Right? You saw it. Now you have to say something. Even if he's still going to say it, even if he's still going to do it, it won't be your fault when he does it because you did your part. Now the question that's going to become relevant, if we understand it that way, is the Gemara that, another Gemara, which is whether or not we should even try to rebuke somebody if we know they're not going to listen. If we know they're not going to listen, so should you rebuke them? I think I'm hearing Mincy trying to get a word in. Is that Mincy? Yeah, Mincy.
Isn't there something that comes to your benefit if you do this, provided you do it correctly? When Adina was saying what she was saying, it occurred to me that if you know he's going to sin anyway, then you kind of walk away with this superior feeling, he wasn't going to do it, he doesn't know how to do it, mm-hmm. but I did my piece, and you kind of walk away with this pride of being better than the other guy.
Uh-huh.
So that's the faith that you walk away with. So part of this is to teach you how to recognize humility, to become humble.
Uh-huh. So you think that this phrase, this last phrase, lo tisal av chait, means when you do the hochiach tochiach, don't make sure that when you do it, you don't also still harbor this superiority complex. That's the chait that right. You might have. So I think Aviv had said before, lo tisal av chait means in the medium of your rebuke, make sure that you do it the proper way. You're saying in the aftermath of your rebuke, make sure you don't come out of this thinking any negative feelings about this person.
Plus, all of this pasuk is talking about you and what your obligation is, mm-hmm. rather than what you're doing for this other person. So, meaning, you have to walk away with something from this.
So that's very interesting. That's very interesting way that you phrased it, because the general concern, and this is something we talked about by Hashavas Veda also, it could be applied to almost any interactive mitzvah. There's always going to be a question. Is the mitzvah about what we call the chevtza, or is the mitzvah about the gavra? Now, in regular people terms, that means, is the mitzvah about the person doing it? Is it about the person doing it, or the object of the act? I don't want to call it object, because here we're talking about another person. Or is it about the acted upon, the actor or the acted, right? So here the question is the mitzvah about me doing the rebuke, or is it about stopping the behavior, right? If we were to sort of conceptualize the mitzvah of rebuke, is the mitzvah about me doing something that's going to maybe affect me, as Mincy and Aviva and others are talking about, or is it the mitzvah about stopping this behavior? If you're going to say that the mitzvah is more about me doing something, that if I see something, I have to say something, so then it shouldn't matter, as Adina was saying, it should not matter whether or not the person is going to listen to you. You have an obligation. You have to do what you have to do. If, however, the whole mitzvah is about the person being acted upon to change his behavior, so then if he's not going to listen, so why do I have to say it in the first place? Yeah, Viva.
Along the lines of, I guess, what most of us were saying, it brings to mind Kol Yisrael Arevim. Mm-hmm. So we do have an obligation. So if we read it, Hocheach Tochiach Es Amisechav Lo Sisa Alav Chait, that we have an obligation to rebuke them, and if we don't, then our chait, because of him, we are bypassing a positive instruction to a description of Kol Yisrael Arevim.
Okay.
So we are responsible,
right,
to at least make the effort.
So the truth is, and I have a whole class on this also, there's no pasuk in the Torah that says Kol Yisrael Arevim Zeh Bazeh. There's no such pasuk. The Mefarshim talk about, where do we know that phrase from? Because it comes up in the Gemara. But what's the source of it? One of the sources is this pasuk. One of the sources is that you have to watch out for each other. That if you don't rebuke your friend, you will incur his chait. Because Kol Yisrael Arevim Zeh Bazeh. as the Medrash says, quite literally, we're all in the same boat. And the Medrash says, if there's a hole in the boat, so it's everybody's responsibility to fix the hole. Because if everybody says, well, he made the hole, well, then everybody's going down, right? It's not, the hole's not just affecting one person, it's affecting everybody that's in the boat. So they understand this pasuk to be, Kol Yisrael Arim Zebezeh. You're going to have to carry that burden if you don't tell him and fix the boat yourself. You're going to go down with the ship. So some people say that this is actually the source of that. So it's definitely a relevant interpretation of the pasuk. I'm seeing a couple microphones that are unmuted. Are those people that want to say something, or you're just that's okay, that's fine. But that's part of what we're going to have to talk about here. And what's interesting also, okay, you're going to have to decide. Do you want to go down or up? What's going to be interesting also is how to define the mitzvah of rebuke in the context of the next pasuk too. You'll notice the next pasuk says, Lo tikom v'lo titor es b'nei amecha. We know what that means, right? Lo tikom means don't take revenge. Lo titor means don't bear a grudge. So there again, you have an interplay between what's on the outside and what's on the inside, right? This pasuk also, lo titzen zechicha bilvavecha, don't harbor hatred internally, rather do it on the outside. Similarly, this pasuk, lo tiko, means don't take revenge on the outside, but also lo titor, don't hold a grudge on the inside. And then the great culmination of that, as we all know, v'ahavta l'recha kamocha. What is ahavta l'recha kamocha all about? And there's a big machlokas, you should know, is v'ahavta l'recha kamocha an internal mitzvah, or is it an external mitzvah? How do you actually fulfill that pasuk? How do you fulfill that mitzvah? And it's not entirely clear, but it's the same sort of, it's the same kind of struggle, the same kind of tension in the pasuk. Is it internal or external? But I just wanted to point one more thing out before we transition into our membership meeting for those who want to stick around. The pasuk says first lo tisna zechicha b'levecha, and it finishes lo tisa alavchet. The beginning of it is what we call a lo ta'ase. It's a negative commandment, meaning don't hate, and the end is don't carry the burden. But the middle part, the hocheach tochiach, is a positive commandment. How exactly do we understand the positive commandment when it's sandwiched between two negative commandments? I'll tell you, when it comes to v'ahavta l'recha kamocha, some explain that even though it's in the positive, it's phrased as a positive mitzvah, it's still understood as a negative commandment, and we'll have to see if hocheach tochiach is understood in the same way. Mirza Hashem, next week we'll continue, we'll look at some Gemaras, but this was a general introduction explaining how the pasuk is working and how the dynamic between the first phrase and the middle phrase and the last phrase and the middle phrase. Mirza Hashem will go into the details of some of these Gemaras that we've mentioned today and get under the surface level to understand the depth of this pasuk. Anyways, for those who are just finishing the women's class, thank you for joining. You're more than welcome to encourage to stick around if you're a member for this membership meeting. But if not, Mirtz Hashem, we will see you next week to really understand this mitzvah better.
Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you all.
Thank you. Let me try to.
Thank you. We don't have to log off and log back in.
Thank you. We're just going to do it on here. You're welcome, Hannah. Thanks for coming.
Thank you. Okay. Bye.
Thank you. Yeah. Usher, want to say bye-bye? Say bye-bye.
Meeting.
Say bye-bye. Say bye-bye.
Bye.
No.
There's a moose.
Oh, look at that, Usher.
A Canadian moose.
Oh, a moose.
He's sitting on top of the file cabinet.
Ooh. And there's a hat on. You see the hat?
She jumped on my lap.
Oh, a cat.
It's mommy cat.
You're cats too.
We have
two. Yeah, a cat.
Molly bath. Molly came from the bath.
Not really.